Spoiler alert, Sun Media critic David Zurawiec will be talking about season 2 of House of Cards in this hour of midday, and he's seen all 13 episodes already. That's not from the privilege of being a television critic. That's because Netflix releases the full season of House of Cards all at once. Some fans binge and watch the whole thing. They could spoil the experience for others by giving away the twists and turns. This raises a question of viewer etiquette in the streaming age. We'll be talking about that with David Z. Also on our agenda, the Comcast Time Warner cable deal, Jimmy Fallon's Tonight Show debut, and speaking of spoilers, NBC's coverage of the Winter Olympics. Midday on Media with David Zurawiec, after the news from NPR. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. Our second hour. It's time again for Midday on Media with Baltimore Sun Media critic David Zurawiec. Today, we're going to delve into the evolving etiquette about spoilers. We've all fallen behind on our favorite shows at some point, leading us to plug our ears and run out of the room when our lunchtime discussions turned to last night's amazing episode. But now, with Netflix distribution model for the acclaimed House of Cards, produced here in Maryland, in which all 13 episodes become available all at one time, we're in uncharted territory when it comes to divulging the plot twists that occur within a season. But House of Cards aside, more television audiences are adapting an on-demand approach to watching television, eschewing appointment television in which programs are viewed as they air. And while this may cause a social faux pas or two around the water cooler, it also poses a challenge for television critics like David Zurawiec, who have no gauge for the appropriate time to disclose and analyze the revelations from a given episode of TV. And it is tricky territory, is it not, David?
Absolutely. It's unbelievable. You know, I screened the first 4 episodes of House of Cards about 2 weeks ago. They let us see them, you know, sign on, and you could
That's the critic's privilege. You get them a little bit ahead of
time.
Well,
it was a little tricky. They put them up about 9 o'clock on a Monday night and said you had to have at least 1 hour screen before you came to New York the next morning to interview Kevin Spacey, or you couldn't talk to him. So it wasn't such a privilege. It was kind of a kick in the pants. We control you. Netflix saying we own you. But for 2 weeks I knew about this, and in the first episode, and I, you know, we were talking about this, we're making it up, this is like a jazz combo, we don't know where we're going, so I am not going to reveal this spoiler at this point. Maybe in the conversation a listener
will. You mean here
will.
During the
yes,
show
yeah, I'm not going to reveal what
you
happened.
You are also treading on very gingerly around this whole
I don't want to ruin it for anybody, because it's such a great surprise. But there's a great surprise in episode 1, and it's really quite a big surprise. Well, for almost 2 weeks, 10 days, I'm talking to my editor at The Sun, Ann Talent, the senior features content editor, and we must have had 20 discussions about various blog posts and stories and how we were going to handle the Sunday cover story, and I never reveal it because she's a fan of the show, right? So Friday morning I come in, and we're closing this cover story for Sunday, and I think I was just tired. And I sit down across from her desk, and I'm like, whoo, you know, and I go, so when? And I say the thing about what happens in episode 1, and I completely destroy the episode 4. Now, you know, it's her job to be, you know, the editor and the supervisor, so this comes with, but I could just, she tried to, like, maintain a smile, but her face kind of crumbled, like, so you just ruined this for me.
Wow.
I hate you, yeah.
Wow.
And I had been trying. For like 2 weeks, I had been successful. It's really hard in this new model to do it. And it's great. You know, we did the story Sunday where we talked to some other critics and other media analysts and folks. And nobody knows what the answer is. One person said, well, we should give it a day. That was Brian Stelter over at CNN's Reliable Sources. Bob Thompson, the pop culture guru at Syracuse, said 90 days. I think he was being a little funny because he says it's
That's
the same
a long
as cash,
time.
Cashing a check. He said after 90 days, it's no
the same rule, right?
Yes.
So, but you said that even listeners, viewers, and readers of your blog and your column complain when you give away plot lines from a year ago.
Yes. You know, in the piece, I mean, the Sunday
I'm sorry,
before.
Sorry, folks.
Yes. In the piece from a Sunday before, two people, and they were really quite unhappy with me, said that I gave away the ending to Breaking Bad, which of course concluded several months ago. And I thought, oh my God. And then 2 weeks before that, two people complained and said I gave away a murder that takes place in season one of House of Cards, which concluded a year ago. So right. I'm like, a year isn't enough space for this?
Now, last Friday was Friday the day that Netflix did the dump.
Yes.
That's what I call
yes.
it.
Yeah, it's
I
a
mean,
dump.
It's 13 episodes all at one time.
Yes.
So in our audience today, there could be people
who haven't seen it yet. Sure.
Well, who haven't seen any of it.
Yeah.
But there could also be people who've seen the whole thing.
Exactly.
Seen the whole season.
You got it. You nailed it.
And you wrote that you saw one. There's one particular episode.
First one, yeah.
Is it in the first one?
Yeah.
Where you
yeah.
were just, you really, this is the what you were dying to give away, but you felt you shouldn't.
It blew my pants off when I saw it.
Right.
I'm serious. It just was unbelievable.
But are we going to see more of this? Because really, Netflix is the only one doing this now, right? Dumping a whole season at one time. I know that Amazon has that other show with John Goodman. What is it called?
Alpha House.
Alpha House, excuse
but,
me.
Do yes.
they? Do they?
They're giving
they
them one
drop
a week.
All the episodes?
No, they're staying with the old network TV model. Of one a week, even though they're doing it online and streaming it. It's fascinating, Dan. You know, when you look at the history of really almost all cultural forms, but certainly broadcasting and media, the new technology, the new media that comes in, always imitates the one that went before it for a long, long time. You know, for much of the, certainly for the 1949-50, up until about 1954, the first 5 years of television, it just imitated radio. Took the same stars, just mm-hmm. pointed a camera at them, let them do the radio show.
Yep.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
exactly. And that's some of that's going on when Amazon does Alpha House and releases it one a week like TV does. It makes no sense to do that. And you know, it is. Netflix is the one who's really doing it. Others will do it when they have the right product. You have to have a product that people care about and is going to create a buzz. But, you know, when you think about it, it is kind of goofy. First of all, we know everything in our leisure lives and in our lifestyle and in media technology is pushing towards on-demand. You have to give people stuff when they want it. And newspapers finally, you know, figured that out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what works. But think of this. You know, think of your favorite book. Think of the best book you read, the best page-turner. I just finished the last installment on Robert Carroll's Lyndon Johnson. You know, when I get into that, oh, no, I'm reading Double Down, the guys from Game Change.
Okay.
Think if they only gave me one chapter.
At a time.
And then said, you got to wait till next week to get the next chapter. We'd be insane, you know? So why do we allow an outdated network television model that was formulated really in the 1920s for radio, in the era of Amos and Andy and the Goldbergs and all those early radio shows, of saying you have to wait a week for an episode.
A question. Do they have the production capacity to do it? Obviously, House of Cards does, because they film a whole season, right?
Right.
Edit a whole season,
right.
And then it's dropped all at one time.
Yeah.
But I wonder about, are other
anybody
companies set
yeah.
up for that kind of production?
Oh, yeah. NBC could put it online, let you stream. Anybody
okay.
could, yeah.
Now, I want to ask our listeners about this. Even though I understand David's problem as a critic, because you've always had this problem, right? Almost always, because you get screeners.
Yeah, but,
right?
You know, traditionally, yes, but traditionally.
You know what's coming.
Yeah, well, you did. You're absolutely right. We used to do in newspapers previews. You know, if a show was going to debut Sunday night,
right.
We tried to review it in the Sunday morning paper. Mm-hmm. And that was part of our advantage.
Right.
Yes.
You have to be careful you didn't spoil it
yes.
for the reader.
That's
right?
Absolutely true. And then once we started to get into the era of DVDs and on-demand, and then people started, and the newspapers really moved online. We started to move towards the recapping model, where people recap, and after the final credits rolled, say Sunday night after an episode of Mad Men, it was pretty much fair game. You could go write anything you wanted about it. This is much more confusing. This is a new model.
I wonder if it's confusing for our listeners.
Yes.
Have you run into this spoiler issue with House of Cards, with anything? Another series I'm interested in is True Detective on HBO.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. If you miss it on Sunday night, you know, and you've got a friend at work or somebody at work who you share this with, and, you know, it gets a little tricky if you missed it. and your coworker actually saw it. Let me ask you about House of Cards. Just looking at it artistically, I mean, what do you think so far this season? I've got mixed reviews on Facebook from some of our listeners on it.
I love it. I mean, I really love House of Cards. Last year when it debuted, you know, David Fincher, The Social Network, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. David Fincher directed the first 2 hours, and it seemed so rich and lush and nuanced compared to most television that I thought, my God, this is the best drama on television. I don't care where it goes content-wise. It looks so good, and it's so great. When they brought in other directors the rest of the season, it didn't drop off that much. They kept the story going. Also, Kevin Spacey is a tour de force. He's marvelous. And I think it's his peculiar background. Even being a two-time Academy Award winner, he still has stayed wedded to the theater, you know, being the artistic director at the Old Vic in England and all he's done for them. He loves theater. That his performance in this series would be worth the price of admission itself. And Robin Wright is pretty fabulous, too.
And she won a Grammy.
Yeah, not a Golden Globe. Yeah.
Season two of House of Cards picks up his former House Minority Whip, that's Frank Underwood, that's Kevin Spacey, has just been appointed vice president.
Yeah.
So we got a clip here, David.
Okay.
In this
great
clip, he uses his force of conviction to make his security detail look just as he wants it.
We'd like to increase the size of your detail to full head of state status starting tomorrow.
Well, that won't be happening.
Well, it's good to get a head start, so that by the time the announcement...
These are my last few days before I never have privacy again. I intend to savor these moments for as long as I can.
But, sir, in terms of safety, I think...
Until I'm confirmed as the vice president, security is at my discretion. Is that correct?
Technically, yes.
Then but... that's settled.
All right, we'll wait until the announcement. Now, assuming the confirmation goes through, we'll need to work out the logistics of moving you into the Naval Observatory.
That won't be happening either.
The congressman will be remaining in his townhouse.
Oh, and one last thing before you go. I'd like to have Edward Meacham serve on my detail.
He's Capitol Police.
For now, you're about to appoint him to the Secret Service.
That would require an accelerated training program. Sir, we have plenty of qualified agents, men and women with years of experience.
And I look forward to working with all of them as long as Edward Meacham is on the detail. Thank you very much for your time.
Kevin Spacey, House of Cards.
And if you haven't seen it, that Southern accent is he's a congressman from South Carolina, and it's a big part of his character.
Speaking of spoilers, we have the Winter Olympics to talk about today as well. Now, this has been a long-time problem with Olympics, a long-time issue, especially here with Sochi, which is 5,000 miles away, where 3 a.m. Eastern Standard Time is prime time. So everything's been happening over there. And Twitter and other social media break the results of competitions before we get to see these things, right? And I don't quite understand what's going on. I'm a little confused about it this year because you can find on the internet, ESPN, USA Today, the results. And that wasn't that always the case? And NBC holds it back as if it's some sort of reality TV show and not not really a news story, right? They hold it back and edit it, right? So you see it in prime time, even though everything has already happened, correct?
It's varied. I mean, you know, obviously when it was in the United States, but generally, yes, that's true. The time zone, the location to some extent determine that in past Olympics.
Oh, sure.
But generally, yeah, you're absolutely right. And especially in the last... 2 to 3, maybe even 3 to 4 Olympics the last two for social media, certainly, Dan, has really, you know, for what, you know, that's made a tremendous difference. But really, in the era of online journalism, it's changed the game tremendously. What it's done is it made the artifice and manipulation by NBC or the network, NBC, I was going to say any of the other networks that had it, more obvious, you realize that they're serving their primetime advertisers, not you as a viewer.
Right.
And people get very upset. It's been an issue back in the 90s because I've been writing for about it that long easily.
And I wonder if people care anymore, though. Is this an issue with folks? When you tune in at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, you're watching a figure skating competition or at bobsledding, whatever it is, you could know the outcome because it's possible to know the outcome, yet you don't. Do you just put yourself in a bubble and say, I'm going to go with NBC on this? Or do you really, if you're really into it, do you want to know the results ahead of time?
This is something that really does interest me in terms of the audience, what they're doing. My sense is this year, especially this year and the last one in Torino, is that the audience is less engaged, that we as a nation of viewers are much less engaged.
Because the stories aren't as compelling? Or what?
I don't think it's the stories aren't as compelling. I think two things are going on. One, we have so many more sources of instant information that the fact that a network is trying to control it seems phony in a way.
Oh, it's phony. I think people resent it.
And yeah, thank you. That's the word, resent. It insults our intelligence as viewers. I think that's part of it. I think also in a strange way, not in a strange way, I think in another way, I'm going to get into trouble here, but I'm going to say it anyway. I think we've become much more, depending on your point of view, savvy or cynical about these Olympic Games. You know, and it wasn't just that I was a kid, but, you know, when that amateur hockey team beat the Russians, that was, we were all in, man, emotionally. We were all in. Yeah. Now, you can't get that way anymore. I don't think anybody's that way about anything.
I'm with you on that. I'm so disappointed that we don't have college boys and college women playing hockey.
This is where I'm going.
Well, actually, on the women's side, what am I talking about? There is some professional women's hockey, but it's not the NHL.
But I'm gonna try to be gentle about this too. These Olympic athletes, you know, they create these storylines and they try to make them into these paragons of self-sacrifice and heroism. And it's just such phony stuff. And you see them after, and they get involved in stuff, and they don't do any kind of sacrifice. They're cashing checks from everybody.
It's not true for all of them, though.
No, it's not true for all of
them. There's a little bit of nobility in there.
But we're much less gullible to the hype from NBC, who is trying to sell us something about
these
things.
Oh, I see what you're saying. That carries over. You're sort of cynical because, you know, they're presenting this as a reality TV show, practically.
The selfless Lindsay Vonn. No, I don't buy that for one. Okay, now I'm getting ragged up.
I got to tell you one thing before we go to the break about the Olympics coverage I thought was really odd. I watched an NBC affiliate, not here, not Channel 11, an NBC affiliate out of Pittsburgh over the weekend. And I thought this was very strange. This is an NBC affiliate that can't show video of a competition from the Olympics, even though it's NBC, right?
Yeah.
And they showed still photographs of, I think it was the shootout in the hockey game, this great shootout between the U.S. and Russia in the hockey. Right. And they showed still photographs in the 6 o'clock news. Because why? Because NBC doesn't let an affiliate use actual video?
Well, they would
have. That's a little crazy.
It is a little. It's totally crazy. But you know what? See, that's part of it, Dan.
That's going to hurt ratings. If I catch 90 seconds at the 6 o'clock news, I'm not going to watch the highlights at 9 o'clock at night? Come on.
Well, and you know what NBC is telling their affiliates? Nobody else is going to have this video. We got it roadblocked. It's not going to get. You'll at least get still photographs because you're our affiliates. You know what? You know, and it's unbelievable because, you know, maybe it's me. Maybe I've become cynical. But the networks I've dealt with, they'll lie to their own affiliates. Yeah. They'll screw their own.
I don't
own
see how they can control it forever, David. Because that video, that's going to end up on social media. It's going to get out somehow.
Of course. Why if you look at the graph, for a network audience, that's why the arrow keeps going down, 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 because they're fighting reality.
410-662-8780 is our phone number here. If you want to join me and David Zurich as we talk about television in this hour of Midday on Media, toll-free long distance, 866-661-9309. And the Midday email address, midday@wypr.org. Email from Gary in Baltimore said, my most epic spoiler moment came as The Wire's fourth season was being filmed. I visited the set and was chatting with, that's the problem with, you know, when you live in the place where they make it, right? I visited the set and I was chatting with the head of security about working in the show, hearing his story. Then out of nowhere, he points to the actor portraying Bodhi and says, you see him? tonight we filmed the scene where he gets shot. Before rapping, I had a major plot line ruined for me.
Hollywood on the
Thank
Patapsco.
You, Gary. Yeah, that's
here,
the
man.
Problem with that. That's yeah, it. You can run into that. 410-662-8780 is our number here. Please ask Z to compare Netflix's House of Cards to the original, the British original. I haven't seen the new one, but found the original compelling viewing.
Yes, great question.
From Kevin in Hagerstown.
Kevin, thank you so much. I loved the original. In fact, this is great. I think it was 1990 or 1989, but Ian Richardson, an actor I love who's no longer with us, Ian Richardson, who played Francis Urquhart, I think was his name, in the original, came to the U.S. to promote that series. And for some reason, Helen Mirren was also promoting. She may have been promoting Prime Suspect. And it was out in California, and it was a PBS thing. And Helen Mirren, she was just really breaking through in terms of TV. And I think she thought of the press out there as the British press. So anyway, Richardson does a press session with us. And almost every answer to every question is the line from his show that his character says something like, well, I couldn't possibly I could comment on that, but whatever it is. And it's brilliant. He's hilarious. He has us in stitches. And then
is the character the same as Spacey?
It's very much the same.
In terms of power lust and bloodlust.
Oh, very much the same, really? except he has his relationship with the reporter is also a little more complicated in some ways.
Is it sexual?
Yes. And this is the brilliant thing about Bo Willimon's screenplay for the Netflix version. I wondered how they were going to deal with this. I think there's a scene where she calls him daddy or something because there's such an age difference. Oh, Richardson plays this to the hilt. It's wickedly delicious, the whole thing. She's young. And it's Shakespearean. Because it's the arrogance, Dan, with the reporter, both the arrogance of journalism and the arrogance of youth. And she doesn't know how far over her head she is, how deep into the rings of hell she's descended with this guy. And he's playing it wicked. He's looking at the camera and he's going, oh, man, he's practically smacking his lips. It's brilliant. In this version, and I remember Bo Willimon, before they started shooting, we talked about this, and he said, not about this, but about going from the original to this, which he has great respect for. And he said, well, that's a real challenge, blah, 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 I'm going to do this. In this one, that's not the same father-daughter relationship. What they do in this one is she has, remember in the first season, I'm not giving anything away, that scene where she's on the phone with her father while she's with him.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
all I'll say.
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant. You know, I saw a quote from Willimon this week where he said, you know, some people say they don't like it because we're too dark in season two. He said, we love the dark. We're not going away from the dark. That's what I love about this series. You know, ever since Homicide, Life on the Street, TV has been telling producers, really good producers like Tom Fontana and guys like this, oh no, you're too dark, you're too dark. America loves the darker show. True Detective, this one.
Breaking Bad.
Yeah, you couldn't get darker than this one.
And we're going to talk about True Detective in just a moment. A couple of calls quickly here for David Zerowick. We'll start with Tom in Mount Vernon. Go right ahead with your comment, please.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. It's always a pleasure to hear David talk on your show.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask David his opinion of the local coverage of the Olympics. It's become very clear that that the local affiliate for NBC has just cashed in. And for God's sake, they're doing shots from Mount Pleasant Ice Arena, and they're saying live reports from Sochi, when it's very clear that everything is videotaped. They're not getting any live reports from Sochi.
I agree with Tom. I'm a little confused about what's live and what isn't. How can it? Some of these things, they can't be live. They were so far ahead of us time-wise.
Well,
right?
you know what, Tom? Listen, you have just done
maybe
done,
in the morning.
You may have done a public service because I'm going to start running the DVR here on these guys. And I don't know.
I know the hockey game. I watch the hockey game. Yeah. Right? I know those are live because they're at 7 o'clock in the morning or 8 o'clock in the morning.
You know, I got to tell you, this is true. And I'm not saying this about BAL because I don't know, but I'm going to watch them now. I'm going to watch them very carefully for this because if they're doing this and there is a tendency when you have a big live event for people to do this. I remember when I was in Dallas, the paper, we were both owned by the LA Times, the paper and a big TV station in town. And the guy, this is great. They went to a national political convention, and the anchor and the news director and the other guy were drinking, I think, at dinner, and they got locked out of the convention hall when the event started. So what they did is they videotaped, and then they ran it as live later.
Oh, no.
When I caught them, when I called them up to get their response, the news director had the gall to say to me, I don't know what the problem is here. We were in the mode that we in the industry refer to as look live.
Look live.
I said, what?
That's look live.
It looks live. That's what it was. I thought, these guys will do anything. So I don't know what BAL's doing. But there is a great temptation.
They have these stand-ups live, I think, from the ice rink over here.
Mount Pleasant. I hate that. And that's what they're calling live?
That's part of the promo for
you're
the
walking
network.
The line. When you say live from, you know, that's like the school board meeting was at 3 in the afternoon, and they have a reporter at 11 o'clock standing in front of a dark building on North Avenue.
Well, he's
and
live.
You bet in TV. You like that. You bet in TV.
Live, local, late breaking.
You had a TV show.
Live, local, late breaking.
You probably did that on Sunday morning. I think you did that. I think you had a couple phony live shows.
You mean when I was on Channel 2?
I think you did.
What are you saying,
David? You
weren't
really eating cereal. They taped it. You know, you...
it was... David, believe me, that show was live. That show...
I don't think you had the budget for look live.
We were flying without a net, baby.
I remember it.
Up on that trapeze, and there's nothing down below.
I think I remember that, Dan.
I remember, people
videotype
would say,
might have not been in your budget.
Please tune in to Roderick's for Breakfast, because it's really live, and anything could happen. Okay, here's...
Thanks, Tom. That was really good. Honestly, you got me on a case. Thanks.
This is Nick in Baltimore, okay. David. Nick's calling for you now. Hi.
Hi, Dan. How are you doing today?
Okay.
So I'm calling because I just wanted to play a little devil advocate with you guys here. NBC is doing a great job of putting every event live, online. All you have to do is sign in with your Comcast or Verizon account, and you can watch anything you want live, online, on your phone, on your tablet, whatever. And then they have full-length replays there, too. So if you're really into hockey, you can watch Hockey Live. You can watch every...
Nick, I just want to make sure I get this clear, because the Olympics will be over soon. I still don't get it. There are some live events on NBC Sports Channel, right? NBC SC.
You can watch on the NBC Sports Network. They carry some of the events live on the network on TV on your cable.
Right. But you're saying on the internet.
Online,
you're talking about the internet or using an app.
Either one. You can go online and watch all the events live.
Okay. Thank you, Nick. I have tried this. There's an NBC Live Sochi app.
Right.
And every time I go to it, I seem like I missed something. I'm too late. You still got to get up. Because it's live, you have to get up at, 3 a.m.? 4 a.m. And also the ones that the app isn't working for me. It seems like it says 12 p.m.
Yeah.
Luge. Two-man luge. I love two-man luge. 12 p.m.
If you're getting up at 12 p.m. for the two-man luge,
it's
Dan,
at noon.
You got to get alive.
It's at noon, two-man luge.
Noon. Okay.
But, and I go and I push and it doesn't come up. So maybe it's my incompetence. But I think Nick is right. He sounds like he's getting it online and he's streaming it to his television.
You know, and I'll tell you, this is typical, I think, of the disengaged audience, the less engaged audience. Remember when Phelps was in the Summer Olympics? I remember, you know, I was doing a story on this about, you know, how you can watch it online, blah, blah, blah. And we were in the conference room at the Sun, and we called it up on the big screen, you know, we had all the editors there. We saw almost nothing. It kept stopping. It kept cutting out.
Oh.
And then...
It's better now.
And then when... Yes, it is better now. But then when I called NBC to talk about it, and they're pretty good. I mean, I have a good relationship with the NBC sports folks. I think because I like Sunday Night Football so much, and I hate CBS so much. But they said, oh, no, Z, it's not. No, it's your problem with your bandwidth at the Sun. You know, it's not us. You know, the Sun has antiquated equipment.
Could have been
well,
true.
Well, I checked with our people. I checked with our people, and it was absolutely not true. But they were happy to tell us the lie that it was our bandwidth. It wasn't. They had a lot of problems. And I expect they're better now, yes.
One thing about NBC coverage that's pretty steady, I think it's CNBC. That gives you curling almost all the time. It's like wall-to-wall, 24-7.
It's better than CNBC's other programming.
Listen, can we take a call from Brian? Brian, welcome to Midday on Media with David Zerwick. Hi.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm enjoying listening to the show.
Good.
As an aside, but it's relevant, one of the things I'm known for is I am the inventor of streaming media in 1989. I'm very interested in this subject of House of Cards and how things are distributed. My motivation there was, believe it or not, I'm a Poly graduate. My motivation was to be able to hear Poly football games as they happened while I was up in Massachusetts at Verizon Labs, and also Hillbilly at Harvard should I ever leave Massachusetts.
What year are we talking about, Brian?
1989.
Okay. You
can Google me, Google history and Brian Raila, that's R-A-I-L-A, and you'll get the whole rundown. I'll save you the time on that. But these technologies are always around well before. It's like your guest was talking about the lag in adoption of business models and even more so entertainment models, carrying from radio to television or magazine to newspaper and so on. This is interesting. I think it's particularly relevant. It's important to know Alexander Graham Bell's original business proposition to investors had nothing to do with house-to-house, person-to-person communication. If you look at his business model, he was trying to raise money to distribute vaudeville performances from urban areas to rural areas that were not served with vaudeville theater.
And what year, Brian, what year do you think that was?
Look into it, but it would be early 1870s.
Okay.
All right, so our point here is technology's slow advance or technology actually being ahead of what? I'm sort of lost myself. Why don't we take a break? This completely threw me off.
I'm happy to explain it because Brian
A little history lesson, and we were talking about the Olympics, so I'm...
Okay.
Maybe I'm tired. I don't know. What is he talking about?
He was coming off of my comment about how the new technology, when you get a new technology, especially in entertainment media, it always imitates the old one. Remember we talked about radio, TV looking like radio when it first came in. Internet first looked like newspapers when it first came out. They put pages up that looked like newspapers till it finds its own formula. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Well, he was saying that streaming, the technology, has been there a long, long time. Now, in his case, he's saying it was 1870s. I don't know about that. I can't confirm.
He's saying he invented it in 1989.
But he's talking about, he invented it in 1989. But as far back as 1870, Alexander Graham Bell was trying to use his telephony technology to bring vaudeville to rural areas. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's perfectly, in my sense of the history of American popular culture, that's possible. I don't know it to be true, Dan. I'd have to look it up, but I don't know.
But I'm trying to get why it's relevant to our discussion.
Because
today,
he was talking about, we were talking about the new technology of Netflix, and yet
we're still getting used to this idea that there's a...
We get the technology, Dan. There's a lag between when we get it, when we get a business model with it that works, and then when we adopt it. We were saying, remember that Amazon is still using the old model of releasing an episode every week of Alpha House, even though it has the technology.
It could do it all.
That's all.
Well, thank you.
So it was a good point.
I appreciate you helping me through that. Speaking of business model, can we talk about Time Warner Cable and the Comcast?
Yeah, merger? Talk business.
And what it means for consumers. Talk about cynicism, a little bit cynical about this. My view of it is it's just going to cost us more money, consumers. And it's already cable costs are going up.
Well, you know, that's the answer to almost everything. It's going to cost us more money in America today. But
where is the efficiency of scale, though? Isn't that supposed to help us with costs?
Efficiency of scale is never helps us. It helps them make bigger profits.
Yeah, it doesn't help us.
Here's a couple things I think that are important to think about. Number one, of course, this fits the trend of massive consolidation. We see it in every front in media right now. And by the way, it's funny because remember how the internet was supposed to democratize everything? Well, you know what? Couple big companies already conquered that frontier, and now you can't drive your cattle anymore from Minnesota to California because they put up the wire. The frontier has been colonized, these big companies, and now they're more voracious and they're bigger than ever. And that, you know what, that's the history of American broadcasting, I mean, and American media. Just amazing to me, Dan, when I think back to the Communications Act in the 30s. We could have had the model that Britain has with the BBC. We didn't. We gave broadcast licenses to David Sarnoff at NBC, Bill Paley at CBS and ABC, and said, let the corporations take the airwaves. They'll be good stewards on behalf of us. Hey, how did that work out? Okay, well, now, on the other side, the people who are screaming, oh, this is awful. Listen, two things here. Comcast has, via its ownership of NBC, a lot of broadcast licenses for stations it owns and operates, like WRC in Washington. Those owned stations are the cash cows, are the engine of network television. Their profits are enormous. Even in this downward cycle, their profits are enormous. But the FCC controls those licenses. Now, the FCC, you know, one of my professors 1,000 years ago described it as the Leaning Tower of Jell-O. It is a scandal what the FCC has done in terms of not regulating these companies. But Comcast will tread very carefully on this. They're going to try to do everything correctly so as not to disturb the FCC in terms of its broadcast licenses. And the FCC has power over Comcast that it has over few other companies that would be from the cable world, because cable they don't regulate, but they do regulate broadcast. And I would say that there is enough of a pushback, not just from groups that lobby on behalf of the public interest in media, but from the public itself, about people who are angry about dealing with these companies like Verizon and that for decades now. This is going to have a hard time going through. If Comcast wants this, they're going to have to give some things up. They may even tell them, you have to give up those owned and operated stations, and they'll never give them up. No company will give them up. So A, yes, it's good. It's cause to be troubled by this movement towards consolidation. It's not even a movement. It's a stampede. But also, in this case, because of the player being Comcast, it's more complicated because they have those broadcast licenses. Don't forget, Comcast got rid of Keith Olbermann, who was making a lot of money for MSNBC. They feel the pressure in Washington because of those. It's their Achilles heel.
A comment on this from one of our listeners, Frank, in Carroll County. He says, I've noticed on the Comcast Time Warner deal that whenever someone is in favor of it, they always state that it will only give Comcast Time Warner 30% of the cable market, only 30%. Always left out is that Comcast will control a lion's share of broadband, which would enable them to control far more of the market as a whole in America. They could determine what sites would get good treatment and which would be slowed down and not even allowed on their network.
Yes.
Essentially giving them a near monopoly. Why is this part of the deal always swept under the rug when deals like this are discussed? Actually, I heard that discussion on the Diane Rehm Show the other day. We need to take a break. More Midday on Media with David Zurich when we get back. We'll talk about Jimmy Fallon, the new host of the Tonight Show, and how that's working out. And also True Detective's anthology-style noir on HBO. We're going to talk about that. It's really changing the landscape for so-called prestige television. And David has a tribute to the late Sid Caesar coming up. Spoiler alert, a little bit spoiler alert maybe. If you haven't seen the fifth episode of True Detective on HBO, Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson. Really extraordinary. Oh. I really got pulled into this one. You know, I don't have a record of watching series on television. I don't personally do it. This one has pulled me in.
The acting is so yeah. extraordinary.
Yeah,
so.
And the whole style and motif of this is great. Here's a clip for you. Rust Cole, played by Matthew McConaughey, in 2012, no longer a part of the police force, is being interviewed by two detectives regarding his 1995 bust of Reggie Ledoux, a suspected killer who was a meth cook and, as it was revealed, a kidnapper and child abuser. Now, McConaughey speaks in broad philosophical terms, as usual, but have a listen to this.
Why should I live in history, huh? I don't want to know anything anymore. This is a world where nothing is solved. And someone once told me time is a flat circle. Everything we've ever done or will do, we're going to do over and over and over again. And that little boy and that little girl, they're going to be in that room again. And again. And again. Forever.
Now, if you haven't seen this and you think that just sounds too weird and over the top, what is that all about?
Well, brilliant. Brilliant. Matthew McConaughey is brilliant. He's so far out there. Honestly, I watched this. The first couple episodes I watched, I thought, this must have been what it was like when people saw a young Marlon Brando or James Dean. You know, the first couple times you saw him on the screen. This guy is out there so far as an actor. And Woody Harrelson provides the perfect ballast to kind of keep,
exactly. Just, I totally agree with you.
It's brilliant.
And the way they do this, flashback isn't the word. But they are dealing with two storylines at two different times, and you don't know why exactly.
Yes, and you've got a novelist writing this, and he's pushing it. Now, and I'll tell you something. He has not said this, but this guy is heavily influenced by The Wire. I mean, he's even got a couple actors from The Wire in this thing. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating to watch people now trying to expand sort of the narratives of television that way.
Now, is it your understanding? I use the term anthology because I thought I saw this referred to as an anthology show, meaning True Detective is the title, and that there'll be a series with McConaughey and Harrelson, and then maybe another series
with
different actors.
Yeah, very savvy by HBO. They knew they had McConaughey and Harrelson for 8 episodes. We're not going to get more than that.
And they produced it, right?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. God blessed us with 8 episodes from these two on screen together on TV. That's as good as it's going to get. They're not going to be back. They might. Who knows? Maybe somebody comes up with the money. I doubt it. But they've set the template now by saying anthology where they can get two other great actors together. And, hey, that maybe they're between feature films or they need to raise some money to do an independent film. Right. And they go, what the hell? We'll do it. Look at all the good press these guys got. So they could be bringing the best acting talent to television for these series. At first I thought it was strictly the British model where you just make 6 or 8 episodes, get good people. They don't care if it's TV or theater or what it is, much like in a way like Kevin Spacey. But I think it's very smart to say anthology and open the door to some of the best actors. That's a great idea.
David, Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah.
Tonight's show. Have you written about this week yet?
I haven't written yet. I wanted to give it some time. Yeah. See a few. I love Jimmy Fallon. I really, I didn't at first, but I've come to really admire him in a profound way for his music, for his musical performances, especially his I don't know what to call them. They're not his homages to other performers.
Yeah.
His Neil Young stuff is just stunning.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And his Bruce Springsteen stuff took him to a level nobody else in late night can get near. And I think people will watch him for that.
Yeah, I don't know who does that.
No, nobody has that kind of talent, you know?
Now, the idea was put Jimmy Fallon on at 11:30 and pull in the younger viewers that we've been losing over at NBC in the Leno years. Is that true? Do young people watch tune in at 11:30 to watch late night TV, or do they watch clips the next day?
I think they watch. I think I think different young people watch different ways. You know, when people generalize, I think we're always in trouble. But I'll tell you this: this is the real utter stupidity. Let me just be frank here, because I've been kind of reined in for Zerwick today. But the utter stupidity of network TV is this concept that young people, young adults, will only watch young people performers. That's just crazy. How old is Jon Stewart? Stewart's in his 50s.
David Letterman?
Yeah.
Do they still watch him?
Or? I don't know. I don't know about Letterman, you know.
But you're right about Stewart.
Yeah.
Hey, let's go to Sid Caesar. Since we're talking about television, the early days, a funny people, funny man who died last week. Sid Caesar, you wrote a really nice piece about him in The Sun. And I'm going to treat you to a clip here. This
is
from your show of shows. Which was in the 1950s.
Yep.
And here he is with, he's playing a married man who's not living up to his wife's expectations on her birthday. And, of course, the wife is Imogene Coca.
This is the Hickenloopers, I think. Yeah, yeah.
You didn't even wish me happy birthday.
Oh, all right. Happy birthday, Dunce.
Sing it.
What?
Sing it.
Oh, boy. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.
Oh, sing it as if you meant it with some feeling.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Yeah.
You know, a bunch of funny stuff we couldn't put on radio because it involved pantomime.
Yes.
Sid Caesar imitating different people,
characters. You guys made my week by playing that. I adore Sid Caesar. I grew up watching him. Brilliant. And you know, he was the first, really the first guy. 90 Minutes Live every Saturday night,
right?
And it after 8 years or so, with your show of shows and then Caesar's Hour, he was shredded. They were doing amphetamines to do those shows, to do 90 Minutes. You could hear some of that manic thing.
Yeah.
This guy, John Belushi, is this guy's descendant. The samurai that Belushi did, mm-hmm. he did it.
I remember. Yeah.
And he spoke Yiddish. He swung his shirt around. He swung, honest to God, I love Sid Caesar. You know, he had that great troupe. Carl Reiner was, you know, the 2,000-year-old man, which some people say is sort of shaped comedy the last 50 years. That was a throwaway almost from Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks.
Was a writer on your show of shows.
And they did it in the writer's room. They kidded around with it, and then they did it at parties. That's the level of genius, of comedic genius in that series. Sid Caesar was so great. Watching him, he would sweat through. You know, you think Gary Williams sweat through. This guy would sweat through 1,000 suits. And the brilliant thing about the Hickenloopers, him and Imogene Coca played a couple. It was all of the post-war stuff that was going on. There was a great all the things that were happening to people. There's a great skit where everybody's moved to the suburbs except them. They can't afford it.
Yeah.
And they all come back to visit. And it's one night. They can't even move in the apartment.
Because so many people come back to visit them in the city?
Because they're so poor. They can't move to the suburbs. And it was post-World War II housing. There was no housing.
Right.
He pays the guy to drive the people's car around the block because there's nowhere to park it in Manhattan. It's brilliant stuff, Dan.
Thank you very much for doing that, David. And by the way, Billy Crystal also had a nice tribute to Sid Caesar in the New York Times, I think over the weekend. I think it was Saturday.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't see that. Yeah, that's great.
Check it out. But check out David Sue at thebaltimoresun.com. David Zerwick, the Z on TV, blogs at the Baltimore Sun about the media and television, and joins us once a month here on Midday. Thank you, David.
It was great. I enjoy this so much, Dan.
Have a great afternoon, everyone. See you again tomorrow.
Midday's senior producer is Nikki Gamer. The producer and director is Jonathan Ahrens. The associate producer, Michael Hemowitz. Our interns are Luke Spicknell, James Daly, Tom Cartaxo, Maya Brown, and Michelle Richardson. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming available at WYPR.org. Dan Roderick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.